There we go. Much better. Also leider würde ich diesen Vortrag auf Englisch halten, aber wir können danach auf Deutsch reden. Ich kann auch ein bisschen Deutsch, so thanks for having me. My German is, there are certain words I still do not know as well. But as mentioned, my name is Elizabeth Stark and I am an open internet advocate. I was one of many people involved in the movement against SOPA in the US. And I want to tell you guys today about some lessons that we learned in the process and a bit about the story of what happened. So it all began in October of 2011 when I got a phone call from some of my friends who were internet activists. They told me about a bill that had just been released by a guy named Lamar Smith in Texas in the House in the US called the Stop Online Piracy Act. No one had heard of it at the time. But basically, after reading up on the bill, we realized that this was the worst bill we had seen in over a decade of being involved in internet advocacy. So we called up our friends over at Mozilla, including the general counsel and one of the founders in the chair, and we said that we needed to do something. So we and a group of individuals ranging from lawyers to entrepreneurs to venture capitalists to advocates and a lot of folks in between organized a meeting in early November 2011 at Mozilla's headquarters in Mountain View, and we had people on the phone from New York, DC, and everyone in between. And we had somebody there who was a staffer for one of the Congress people, Zoe Lofgren's her name, and we were told that this bill was going to pass. In fact, there were so many supporters, including the Firefighters Union, we were like, why do the firefighters care about this? That if we didn't do something huge, and really huge, it would pass. So we were given a tall task. And what we did was we decided at that meeting to organize on November 16th of 2011, National Censorship Day, a day of protest against SOPA. Fight for the Future, which is a group, was quite involved in this, and Tumblr, some of you guys may have heard of it, actually surprised us all by creating this anti-censorship tool on their website, which ultimately resulted in oh, and here's the tool that they actually ended up using to engage their users in calling Congress. In the end, over 80,000 people on that day called Congress. And we thought this was amazing. The phones were ringing off the hook. People were now understanding why this bill was so dangerous and what was wrong with it. So then along comes December of 2011, when there was a hearing in Congress, the markup hearing. And 200,000 people tuned in to this online, which frankly, I'd never watched a congressional hearing. Lots of my friends hadn't either. And yet on Twitter, everyone I knew, it seemed, was watching this hearing. And what was fundamentally obvious to everybody that was tuned in was that Congress did not understand the internet. In fact, it was so blatantly obvious that the internet community finally woke up to the fact that the people that were regulating the internet in the US did not understand really any kind of technical aspects of it. And we realized that it was no longer okay for Congress not to understand the internet. That said, it also wasn't necessarily okay for people on the internet side of things to not at all understand how Congress in the US works. So during this hearing, a guy named Jared Polis, he's out of Boulder, Colorado, a representative. He's one of the few people in Congress that does understand the internet. He's also a former entrepreneur, decided to troll Congress, really, and the folks on the committee. And what he did was he decided that he was going to propose an amendment, because the point of the hearing was to propose amendments to the bill that said that, well, if we're so concerned about piracy and SOPA is going to be used to censor the internet, we shouldn't allow it to be used for porn. Because really, do we want to use government resources to help pornographers? So he actually, in the hearing, included the lyrics of this song, which some of you may know from Avenue Q.
Finally, I get to teach a whole lesson all by myself. And I'm going to teach something relevant, something modern, the internet. The internet is really, really great.
For porn.
I've got a fast connection, so I don't have to wait.
For porn.
What? There's always some new site.
For porn.
I browse all day and night.
For porn.
It's like I'm surfing at the speed of light.
For porn.
Trekkie.
So he actually entered those words into the congressional record. People were concerned that the lyrics might not be appropriate, and then said that SOPA would be a pornographer's wet dream, and I believe that was in the record. So moving on to January, in particular, the Reddit community, how many Redditors are in the room, by the way? Raise your hands. Redditors. Really? Not that many? So they got together and decided that they were going to organize a protest. And what they were going to do was to black out the Reddit site. And for those Redditors that are in the room, you know that Reddit's basically like crack. So if you are not able to access Reddit for a day, that's really giving up a lot. And they came together and decided that on January 18th, which is a day that a hearing was scheduled, they were going to organize a blackout. By the way, later on, there were reports that Reddit had not yet hired any lobbyists for internet policy. And I was like, do people in the media understand that Reddit is a bunch of people on effectively a forum and that there's no way that Reddit is going to hire lobbyists? But anyway, so they came together and did that as a community. Then the Wikipedia community came together. And again, as a community, not merely some top-down approach, decided that they were also going to blackout and organize a protest. So on January 18th, as you guys, a lot of you probably saw, we had this massive internet blackout. And many teenagers then ended up complaining that they were not able to finish their homework. Little did they know. By the way, you could actually access Wikipedia from their mobile site or disable it via JavaScript. It really wasn't all that hard. But the teenagers were mad, and just goes to show how useful Wikipedia is. All in all, on January 18th, we had over 10 million people sign petitions, over 8 million calls attempted, not all necessarily went through, but it was clearly the largest protest in online history. And people in DC were really taken aback. You can see here on January 18th, there were quite a lot of people in support of SOPA. And then as that day progressed, they were dropping like flies. Every few minutes, we'd get a new email on the SOPA email list of the people organizing the protests as to who dropped out. And by the end, many more were not in support of it than were. In fact, on January 18th, we even had people protesting in the streets. And if you had told me a year beforehand that people would be protesting a copyright law, now I'd been involved in the copyright movement for nearly a decade, I would never have believed you. And yet, it actually did happen. And then, moving on to Europe, as a lot of folks here I'm sure know, the momentum spread to ACTA. And this bill that I used to teach about to my students at Yale, which was really quite obscure, they might have read about it merely because I made them, became mainstream. And people knew about it, and people in Poland were protesting in the streets. Even the Polish parliament, by the way, I wish the Congress in the US would do something nearly this cool, but I think it's quite unlikely, decided to protest with Guy Fawkes masks. So what were the lessons coming out of this really unprecedented uprising with SOPA? Well, the first was that it's really useful to have a rallying point, something that people can wrap their heads around. For years, we in the open internet movement had been trying to explain to the world why things like this mattered. But until we had a bill that threatened the very nature of the open internet, that threatened to censor it, that could pose all sorts of technological issues with the DNS system, we weren't able to engage people and rally them. So having this kind of rallying point and a deadline of sorts, specifically when there was a bill that was going to be passed that we had to stop, was incredibly useful. We even, on November 16th, chose a somewhat arbitrary day. There was going to be a hearing, I think, that was then canceled, to set up this kind of protest online. And that also, having this kind of deadline. Think about a Kickstarter campaign when the campaign is going to run out. Well, we did something similar with the SOPA movement. The second is about memes. So evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins is the originator, actually, of the term meme. He used it to be the cultural equivalent of a gene, a cultural idea that mutates in a way. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with, you know, the whole lolcat thing. I don't need to tell this crowd about that. But what we saw with SOPA was that it became a meme. People took it and made it their own. And they created all sorts of memes out of SOPA that then spread. So here's one example.
A long, long time ago, on the world's largest network of interconnected computers, those lolcats used to make me laugh. And I knew I could make a joke and not be sued by nasty folk on the RIAA's behalf. Then along came Sopa Peepa, the internet's very own Grim Reaper. Users could not edit Ars Technica and Reddit, Tumblr, Gawker, Hacker News, and Something Awful sang the blues, and every login was refused the day the lolcats died. Why are laws a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, re-election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies. Speak up before the internet dies. Can you write a decent law? Do you care about copyright at all? Or just winning back your seat? Content will begin to ebb. You'll watch the slow death of the web, and you'll be left with nothing more to tweet. Well, I know it's looking pretty grim, 'cause they'll tear our culture limb from limb. There's too much damn support. Oh, this law we must abort. Oh, let lobbies run amok with our series of tubes and that big dumb truck. And I know some folks who wanna give the day the lolcats died. I hear you saying, why are laws a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, re-election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies. Speak up before the internet dies. Why are laws a...
All right, I think you guys get the picture, but... that video got millions of views and really helped to spread the message. So this is a t-shirt that a friend of mine, Fred Benenson, over at Kickstarter made, the blank blank SOPA blank 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 stupid t-shirt. I own one of these. The SOPA sunglasses, another meme that came out of it. And my favorite, the print the SOPA and PIPA bills on toilet paper. This was a, this was a Kickstarter campaign and it didn't even get funded. I should have funded it, but I think I found out too late. So the third lesson learned is one of chaos. So the internet is decentralized and distributed. I mean, the internet that I want, although unfortunately we've seen it head in somewhat of a different direction, and it is chaotic. And much like that, the movement against SOPA was one of chaos. We often didn't have our shit together. People, were up all night. Nobody knew what was going on. But actually, in the end, that chaos ended up helping us. The internet, a series of tubes, kind of. But that element actually enabled us to have a bottom-up approach, as opposed to on the other side, the MPAA, RIAA, the people who've been lobbying for over a century in the US and around the world to get these types of laws passed, did not have that strength and that base and that ability to have these bottom-up movements. The media after the SOPA protests loved to say that it was Google or that it was Silicon Valley executives who organized it. And frankly, I was one of the main folks behind it. There were a core group of us, but we were not that. And of course, the media loves to create a very convenient story that it was just one big corporation. And it's not just about corporations sitting at a table and negotiating. And until the internet users have a say in the policy that will govern the very internet, we will not accept anything less. So that's one thing that the media more generally needs to learn about the internet. And another thing was that we as a movement had a big tent. We had everyone from Republicans to Democrats to Libertarians to the Tea Party to the lefties, everyone in between. We had BFF, Mozilla, Wikipedia, Tumblr, Demand Progress, we had VCs, startups. This was also the first time that, say, an organization like Mozilla, with hundreds of millions of users for their Firefox browser, took a stance on a policy issue. We really saw that tech companies that had felt strongly about these issues beforehand but didn't necessarily do anything about it finally took a step up and took action. So that was incredibly beneficial. And then another major lesson was you could have all the money in the world, or not really, but lots on the other side, but the ability for people to take action, to do things like 8 million calls to Congress and 10 million people sign petitions and send emails and whatnot, really did make a difference. And while the other side, for example, spent nearly an order of magnitude, almost $300 million over 2 years to lobby for these bills, and the tech companies spent about, you know, 30, the ability to engage people really did make a difference and matter. So here we can see a variety of people that ended up stopping SOPA. And one fun thing we did after all of this was, so Lamar Smith, the guy who was behind SOPA and fought to the very end for it, was from Texas, and you guys may know this famous poster. Well, a few of us got together to create a billboard that was actually in Lamar Smith's district to send the message to him and all sorts of people that he should not mess with the internet because he will be sorry. So this brings us to the movement against surveillance and the revelations with the NSA, in particular the group Stop Watching Us, in which I'm involved. So I don't need to tell you guys, you all know that earlier this year in June, a guy, you know, named Edward Snowden leaked some documents, starting with PRISM and then many others. And as a result, a group of us, many of whom were involved in the anti-SOPA movement, formed a coalition called Stop Watching Us, stopwatching.us. We have over 500 signatures, 500,000, sorry, signatures for our, 500 wouldn't be that many, for a petition. And we have groups ranging from, again, Demand Progress to Fight for the Future, EFF, ThoughtWorks, Reddit, and many in between. And we see here what came out of it. This is the awesome protest organized by folks when Obama visited Berlin earlier this year, where they posed as NSA surveillors and agents. And we also have a group called Restore the Fourth, which came out of the US in the wake of the Snowden revelations. They're specifically geared toward restoring the Fourth Amendment in the US. And they've held protests in over 70 cities across the US. They had over 10,000 people on July 4th, and then thousands more on August 4th. And they've been involved in the kind of grassroots movement to protest NSA surveillance. So earlier this summer in July, a guy named Justin Amash out of Michigan, I'd never heard of him, he's a young libertarian and Republican congressperson, decided he was fed up with the kind of surveillance that was going on and wanted to make a splash. So he proposed an amendment called the Amash Amendment, although there was also a guy named John Conyers co-sponsoring it, that would defund the NSA's mass surveillance of at least US citizens in the metadata collection operating under Section 215. So some of us involved in Stop Watching Us found out about this, and we decided we were going to organize, naturally, a movement to support the amendment. So basically, within 24 hours, we were able to throw up a site. A guy named Sina Kanifar put up an amazing site called Defund the NSA. And we were able to engage 15,000 people in calling Congress within 24 hours with this kind of movement again. In many ways, it was a mini SOPA of sorts. And really, knowing that people can make a difference, that one call could actually sway somebody on this issue, is essential for people to take action, as you can see in this tweet I tweeted here. And in the end, although it only failed by 7 votes, so we were incredibly close, we saw things like the Obama administration issued a statement against the amendment, which is very rare because this was not even a bill, it was just an amendment to a bill, which meant that they were really worried. And the NSA actually set up lobbying sessions too, one for the Democrats and one for the Republicans, to lobby against the amendment. So basically Washington woke up and realized that they were in danger and that we were going to get something passed. So even though it failed by a mere 7 votes, it was actually a victory as far as we were concerned. And with the movement against surveillance, we've also seen memes, much like with SOPA. So here's the NSA coloring book, where, hey kids, you can fill out your information and send it directly to the NSA. Or you can, you know, see where all of your data is and all your friends are. We also have a line that Fight for the Future sent up. If you want to call to stop the NSA directly, here's a phone line. And then on October 26th of this past year, the 12th anniversary of the Patriot Act, the Stop Watching Us Coalition organized a protest against surveillance, a rally against surveillance, where we had people like Bruce Schneier, Rep. Justin Amash, Dennis Kucinich, who's also a representative, folks from the EFF, from ACLU, and many others speak up. We also had a statement from Edward Snowden. And this was garnered thousands of people and was considered a significant success. For those of you in Germany, you had the Freedom Not Fear rally in September, which I understand had some 10,000 odd people. 20,000, okay. Yeah, it depends on the account. But had tens of thousands of people protesting in the street against surveillance. And now, in the US, we have actually a bill by the author of the Patriot Act, Jim Sensenbrenner, called the USA Freedom Act. After the Snowden revelations, we actually have had 30 some odd bills proposed in Congress. And this is the one that a lot of people have gotten behind, particularly in our community, because it has fairly sweeping changes. And we now, in January, in fact, to commemorate the anniversary of the movement against SOPA and the passing of our dear friend Aaron Swartz, we are organizing a major movement in support of this bill. So the bill would do things like end mass surveillance, require transparency on the part of the FISA court, on the part of the companies that are getting surveillance requests, on the part of the government to announce how many people that they're actually surveilling. It would require that a court order be used for US citizen surveillance from foreign courts and a variety of other things. Now, one thing that we as a movement in the US do realize is a lot of this is really on the basis of US domestic citizens, and we need to do more and will do more on behalf of the international issues. In fact, just in the past few weeks, there was a commission appointed by President Obama to overhaul the NSA surveillance process. And frankly, this commission had five people, all men, and they were basically considered to be Obama's friends and buddies. And you know, no one thought they were gonna do anything radical. In fact, one of the members had written so much as, wouldn't it be great if we could surveil people's minds and knew what their thoughts were? Well, that would be really useful in knowing who would, you know, possibly commit a terrorist attack. But apparently Obama was shocked by the contents of this report, because it has over 300 pages that he's bringing it with him to Hawaii to read over the holiday break, and contained recommendations along the lines of, again, appointing a public advocate to the FISA court to give foreign citizens rights under the U.S. Privacy Act of 1974, and then changing the way that metadata is collected. They would like it to be in the hands of private organizations. We as a movement wouldn't accept that. We want it to stop, full stop. It also includes recommendations along the lines of for people to, with regard to encryption and zero days and whatnot, to actually not allow the government to keep those without notifying corporations and actually compromise the security of a variety of individuals. So in the end, I don't need to tell you guys this, but Lawrence Lessig, the famous legal academic, has stated that code is law. And really, even if there's law on the books, it's really code and the technology. What's possible with technology can supersede what's possible in the law. And we've seen this with a lot of the revelations around, for example, Loveint, if any people heard about that, where people in the NSA were actually using the surveillance capabilities to find out, you know, what the people they have a crush on are doing, right? Because that's the kind of thing we should allow. So we as a community need to step up. And last night with the Year in Crypto, we heard this, you know, over and over again. Crypto needs to be usable. So one thing that I feel very strongly about, and we as a movement do, is that we need to be able to engage in communication without being surveilled, and there are technological means that can enable us to do that. So I invite you and all of us as a community to design tools that, you know, my mom and your grandparents and everyone can actually use, and whereby they will not be surveilled. And ultimately, what this comes down to is a broader question of the freedom versus the control of information. And we've seen within this movement people like the RIA, the MPA, and with, for example, the surveillance movement, we are up against something even broader, even bigger. It's a huge governmental complex. You know, they have billions upon billions of dollars. They had political support. You know, they have a massive data center in Utah. Whereas we have, you know, the internet, some technologists, and a whole lot of people. But in the end, I strongly believe that we as a community will win out, and it is our imperative and prerogative as a group to ensure that this happens. This fight is not one that is going to come easily to us, but I do think with the combination of building better technology, enabling people to communicate more securely in an encrypted manner, and engaging not only in the US but around the world on these policy issues and political issues by protesting, by contacting people that are in parliament, by really letting people know that this matters and that we care, that ultimately we, the people that are supporting the freedom of information, will win out. And that is it. Thank you very much. Questions?
We are having a session tomorrow about Stop ACTA protests in Poland.
Okay. even though we're kind of at the end of the time, I'll allow some questions.
I definitely left time for questions.
Yes, I definitely will allow questions.
So. And by the way, check out stopwatching.us and demandprogress.org, an organization that I am on the board of that has been very active on these issues.
We've got four microphones in the room, and we've got a signal angel who takes questions from the internet. Yes, the first question, please.
Okay. I have a question about the role of ALEC in designing the laws that then the lobbying on the corporate side is around the American Legislative Exchange Council, because from what I understand, there are politicians and corporate lobbyists getting together, building prototype laws. And I recently found out that even a number of members of the European Parliament are organized in ALEC to push these things on both sides of the Atlantic. And what we're very concerned about is that this is going to be used in the free trade negotiations between the US, that a lot of the things that we accomplished as citizens, because we have a somewhat functioning democracy still in Europe, are going to be undermined in these free trade things. I think we need to
Sure, so I don't know that much about ALEC, but more generally, you make a very good point. Right now, there's a law in the US, well, more internationally, called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement that was for many years not made public at all, was completely non-transparent, which, by the way, we as citizens need to not accept the fact that our governments are negotiating internationally on these issues on behalf of us and not making any of it transparent, and then letting corporations view what the law is going to be and what the agreements are going to be, but not the citizens and the very people that will be regulated. It's still shocking to me how people, and specifically the US government, is getting away with this kind of thing. But go on, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you're not familiar with ALEC, maybe offline I can tell you a little bit about it. There is actually an organization in the US that is publishing internal documents, and for several of these things that we are concerned of as citizens, they have published the prototype legislation
right.
that then is being introduced in the states.
So this is something that's widespread in the US, and I know that it happens internationally as well, but effectively what you have, and this also happened with SOPA, is that there are lobbying groups funded, not surprisingly, by big corporations that want to see these laws passed, that effectively hand the laws over to Congress people. Lawrence Lessig, again, if you guys are familiar with his work, has now shifted to addressing this issue of corruption in Congress. And then people will introduce the law that was written by the lobbyists that had zero input from, say, the internet community whatsoever into law. So this is a widespread problem that it sounds like ALEC is involved with.
Yeah, and in Europe and the European Parliament. We need to watch it there too.
Thank you.
Do we have, yes, we've got questions from the internet.
Oh, we have two questions from the internet. The first one is, do you have like an abstract formula for winning the next battles?
That would be awesome, but I mean, effectively those 5 points, right, that I mentioned in my talk. So giving people something to wrap their heads around is incredibly important. For example, with SOPA, for years we had said we need to protect the open internet, but until there was a bill that threatened that, it was harder, I think, for people to organize and come together and take action. Similarly, with surveillance, for years, people in the movement knew that we were being surveilled, and the NSA knew everything, but it wasn't until Snowden leaked his documents that people really had something more tangible that they could address. So that's certainly important. Then having a kind of deadline, having a rallying cry, something where people can anticipate the deadline and get involved, and then also enabling people to know that their action can make a difference, which I think with SOPA, we saw that millions of people called Congress, and then we actually stopped it, which was effective. So in January, our hope is that we can use this formula and model again to make a big difference in getting a law passed, which, by the way, something that people criticized us or mentioned, and I agree with this in the SOPA movement, is it's easy to say no. You can always say no to something, but what about engaging in more proactive efforts? So in this case, we're trying to say yes to a bill and get it passed and have significant reform in that capacity.
Next question.
Do you have question.
Time for the next one? Yeah, sure.
So the next one is on the NSA and the support from the American or US American community. So if you get behind the bill from the father of the Patriot Act that only protects US citizens, won't you lose the majority of supporters as it is good enough for the US? And like, does the typical US citizen care enough about spying on the rest of the world?
So yeah, that's a great question, and that's a debate that we've certainly had within our community, because all of us care about this not only from the domestic standpoint, but clearly on an international standpoint. And if we could only get reform where US citizens are not surveilled, but the rest of the world still is, then we won't have really accomplished all that much. That said, there's a debate as to whether we should go for an approach where we will stop surveillance wholesale throughout the entire world, or whether it's better to stop surveillance domestically first. And I am of the mind, and I think a variety of us in the movement, that getting a bill like this passed, which, by the way, the USA Freedom Act now has over 100 co-sponsors, it would have been completely unthinkable prior to Snowden's revelations, would actually be a huge step, because it would show Congress that we are not willing to accept this kind of surveillance. There are other people in the community that want something that's even broader, but we've chosen to take a pragmatic approach, and one where this is a stepping stone to the kind of reform that we want to see. And by the way, the fact that the Presidential Commission even said that non-US citizens should be given privacy protections is huge, because Americans apparently don't seem to care very much about people outside of the US and the rest of the world. So we certainly want to see that kind of reform passed, but we acknowledge that we need to have certain steps before making it broader.
So, any other questions? Wow, that's...
one last one.
One more.
I think there's a fundamental difference between the SOPA PIPA protests and the post-Snowden protests, because SOPA PIPA was about stopping something from breaking the internet, so to speak. So there was a sense of urgency. If we don't act by that day, we will lose everything we had. The Snowden situation is completely different. It's been going on for years. There's this Sensenbrenner stuff and other Amash and so on. But there's, in a way, no clear deadline. There's no sense of urgency for people to say,
that's exactly
if we don't act by
why.
This date, we will lose everything, because we've already lost everything. We have to get it back. So that's one, just a remark. My question is rather on the role of private companies. In SOPA PIPA, as far as I understand, Google, for example, played quite a big role in also providing resources and so on for the phone call stuff and whatever. No? Okay, that's what I heard.
Maybe Google did put up on...
Is there any companies involved in the NSA activities at the moment?
Two quick comments. The reason why we're organizing this big day of action in January for the USA Freedom Act is exactly that. It's to create this kind of urgency. And even though we don't even know when the bill will go into committee and get passed, so we're aware of that. That's a great question about the role of private companies. With SOPA, we did have Google on board. We had a lot of technology companies. Even Mark Zuckerberg tweeted, in support of the protests, so against SOPA itself. We haven't necessarily had the same, actually, in the movement against surveillance. And my theory is because this doesn't as directly impact a lot of the technology companies, although we have seen recently, a few weeks ago, there was a letter from Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and a variety of other major tech companies stating that this could hurt their business. And there were reports that US cloud and other tech companies could lose over $35 billion in sales in the next few years. But we haven't actually seen as much of involvement. Say, with SOPA, there were lots of VCs and investors involved, and we haven't had that here. But we can do it without them, and hopefully they'll get involved as well. But you're right that there has not been this kind of involvement on their behalf.
Okay.
That said, we do have Reddit and ThoughtWorks and other great companies involved in StopWatching.us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've run out of time.